Welcome to Bible Study for Progressives, a show where moderates, liberals, and leftists of all faiths and ideologies come together to discuss scripture, spirituality, and politics. We engage scripture in its historical context, plumb its depths for wisdom and guidance, and apply its lessons to current events and social issues. Whether you're a liberal evangelical, a New Age spiritualist, a social justice activist, or a postmodern theologian, there's something in this show for you. Come, be energized in spirit and mind to understand the word and what it means to be a spiritual person in today's world. I sort of see us as being slammed against each other. Obviously, we can't get all 700 or 73 million people to listen to us, but we've got to dig into that group somehow. We've got to pull some of those people away. I mean, there's got to be some way to deal with reason, in a sense, that they're completely inundated with that Trump's propaganda, such that they believe things that are obviously untrue. So we've got to find a way to reach them. And I think part of the problem is that we can be cause them to run some of the propaganda on both the left and the right, some of the more extreme, divisive type of propaganda, sort of just causes this big fight between us. Now, one of the things I mentioned at another meeting was that this is really a different culture that we're dealing with in many ways, where if you look at it, it's all the rural areas, and it's God and country, individual, rugged individualism, traditional moral values. These are the types of things that they're centered on. And so I've believed that we could reach them using scripture, because that's one way to speak to these people with that shared story. But I think we need to also, on the other hand, reduce the animosity and anger against Christianity on the left, because we need to build a progressive Christian movement. And we can't have that if we're running around calling Christian Nazis, or if we're taking extremist positions about the Bible and Christianity, when it's really, we need to look at it as a faith that we need to tolerate. So I think there's a lot of areas that we can work on to bring the country together, perhaps through this shared story that we all know about. But in any way, we need to reach out. It's a different culture. I mean, I think they might not be turned to us just simply by saying, hey, we've got these great programs and they're going to benefit you too, because that's not where they're at. So we've got to reach them where they're at, and we've got to pull some of them away from that, and we've got to deprogram them in somehow. And that's a very touchy and difficult task. I mean, my brother at Thanksgiving, I just said that all Americans believe in democracy, and he goes off the top saying, this has been a fraudulent election. Where do they get that from, and how do they think that way, and why do they think that way? And we tend to get siloed into certain categories, so we tend to see something as all about race or all about our issue, and we don't see the broader global problem that this rise of fascism, rise of authoritarian is a global phenomenon coming from Europe, coming all around the world. So That would be my response. There's got to be a way to reach some of the more moderate of those people with our policies and our ideas. Sharon, you want to?
Okay. What some of the people talking about with that, Christian Right or whatever, there is a group, I think it's Faith America, I'm not sure the exact name, that is more Christian left progressive. Mm-hmm. Is there any way that group can be included with you to get the Christian element?
Absolutely. I think
there is a group like that. That's why.
Yeah, and there are a number of groups and like that. And there's actually a liberal Christian tradition that goes back a long ways. So their problem isn't activating them because of the unity that you need to get white churches to do anything, like race, the black church, the amount of unity around that issue. We don't have that in the white church. So there's a lot of problems, but if we can at least reach out to them and build a progressive Christian movement and include all those groups, then we might be able to pull those people away who are being tied down by the propaganda that they are surrounded in that community. Go ahead, Sharon.
Okay, another thing I was going to say is that when I do on my Facebook feed, I'll put on there like some of these stuff that are so, I'm sorry, asinine. What I do is I'll put in like, these are not true Jesus teachings and it's not true Christianity, where they're not really for the people. And like, I'm a Jewish Christian. So I also bring in the fact that this is like 1939 Hitler type. I'm sorry, that's what this country is turning into.
That's right. That's
my two cents in.
Thank you, Sharon.
Okay.
Go ahead, Danette.
Okay, I think we run into a lot of danger, a lot of problems when we start espousing what people should be worshiping. I myself am spiritual, but I detest organized religion. And the reason is clear, because it's caused a lot of problems throughout history. I think we run into danger when we have been seeing this for years. The separation of church and state has been getting more and more blurred. I do not like that. I don't think that that religion of any type belongs in our government, state, local, or federal. That being said, I think that a lot of people are put off by the religious right because they are very forceful in making sure that you know that they're religious and you better damn well get on board with their brand of religion. I do not like that, because Christianity is not the only religion. We've got Judaism, we've got Hinduism. What about those religions? We're supposed to have freedom of religion in this country. And this gets me so hot under the collar, I can't even tell you, as you can probably tell. I think that's part of the problem. And we need to get back to separating church from state. We shouldn't have the Ten Commandments on any federal buildings. That needs to all come down. I hate that stuff. Sorry, I'm really passionate about that.
And I think that's the problem. So many people are so passionate about it. And really, the thing is that people, first of all, religion and politics are not separate. They cannot be separate. They have never been separate. They're not going to be separate in the foreseeable future.
They should be, though. That's totally 100% wrong. I know that you're a Christian, Rich, but I totally disagree with that. We need to work on that. That's part of the problem. That is why governments get taken over by religious zealots. And this is what we're looking at.
That would be a violation of the Constitution to restrict somebody's speech because of their religion.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that a federally mandated religion is not going to happen. And it should. That should scare the crap out of everyone.
Nobody,
I'm forcing their beliefs on me. No way.
Right, we're not suggesting that at all. You know, all I'm suggesting is reaching out to that community with something that they understand and the world that they are in. But as far as religion and politics, That's never going to be separate as far as I can see. And it shouldn't be, because basically what that means is that you're separating out. One world can be ruled by your own morale, by moral rules, and the other one ruled by something else. And I think this is what the problem is.
I'm not saying that, Rich. I'm saying that religion has no business being in government. There are laws we need to abide by, but not everyone believes in your God, Rich.
Right, but I'm not, it's not in government. We're not talking about it in government.
But the right has been pushing their agenda for decades, and it's because they want everyone to be a Christian evangelical. That is exactly one of their tenets. It is. Don't tell me it's not, because it is.
I'm not saying
that terrifies me.
Right, but I'm not saying that. And I know that maybe some Christians have that agenda, but that's not the agenda that we're talking about now. We're just talking about what people's values are, what their beliefs are, and what they come to the table with. And so that's what we're dealing with. And more their values and their ability, desire to make change, their inspiration, what inspires them. So it's not about religion going into government. That would be a huge mistake. Church and state must remain separate. But we have to distinguish that, because the only group that is limited by the Constitution is the government. Okay, the churches can do whatever they want. The only thing that limits the churches is their tax status. A lot of people say remove the tax status because they should pay taxes, well, then they'll be able to do anything in the political realm they want without restriction. The only thing that's keeping the church from engaging in political representation of candidates is the tax code. So churches are free to do whatever they want. People of religious faith are free to do whatever they want. And it's not that we need to restrict their expression or any expression of Christianity in the political realm. That alienates people. So I'm sure we got more. Do we have more comments? Go ahead.
I just had one comment. You guys, I'm sure, heard about the Supreme Court ruling on religious church gatherings, basically for Thanksgiving. That scares me. That's the kind of precedent that they're setting, that it's okay for these people to gather in mass with no masks, no social distancing. It's a super spreader event. Why is that okay? Why are they not paying attention to the science? That's the type of stuff that they do. And I don't think you can reason with them. I really don't.
I got to say, my political expectations have reached such a height of cynicism that I was just happy to see that Roberts voted with reason. That's how bad it is, you know?
David Sonborn, go ahead.
Okay, so I was just going to listen today, but I just wanted to add one that nobody seemed to go directly on this discussion, and that is, and the woman that was talking about faith in action, that is part of the central group of Dr. William Barber's Poor People's Campaign. And that's an example where it's an example where Dr. William Barber, by force of his person, is able, I don't know that we can know how wide the influence is at the moment, but he certainly is a fantastic spokesperson for the people that are most at risk. And he's doing it from the stand, and he's not afraid. I mean, he has been taking a stance on the very situation that this meeting is all about. And he's been very outspoken. And within the Poor People's Campaign of getting rid of facing, how do we face Trump's influence? So I just I wasn't going to say anything. I was just going to listen, but I that's one bailiwick where I hope that somehow we can mount force to get on board with what Dr. William Barber is trying, all that he's trying to do. And the kind of, because he is a Christian, he can speak with some knowledge of how to talk to the various religious groups. And at the same time, to speak to what values as well as policies that are needed to move to some place that certainly is more wholesome than where we are now. So I was just compelled to insert that into this discussion.
Thank you, David.
I'm Margo, yes. I'm on the phone. Thank you for letting me involved with this. And I've really been listening, but I really have to be giving you what I believe. And I really appreciate what that man just said. I think that's really important. I also say it's much too dangerous to be nice. We cannot be polite to these, because we really have to call it what it is, and it is fascism. Because my little PS on my emails right now is, it's not only the TP regime causing the problems. When those who are supposed to represent us people are taking a paid vacation while we, the people, are lacking adequate health care, facing starvation and eviction, and the closures of local businesses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which profit, we are showing that the basis of the real economy is being endangered by, they're showing that they're actually working for the corporations and entities which profit from denying us our constitutional and God-given rights. We have to boldly say its name. It's fascism, but there's a term that really bugs them, the repugnance, et cetera, is communism. We have to mobilize everyone in every way to fight and defeat it and make sure all the perps are properly prosecuted and punished. It's not time for Biden to be nice. You got to call them for what they are and make the proper legal and everything, and all of them, Monica and all of them. So I'm really tired of this low intellectualizing. No, we've got to be really dramatic and direct and do the propaganda in a positive way and say, look, you guys, you're being victimized by these that only care about money. Their God is money and profit. They worship, they sacrifice everything on that for their own self, for their advancement and wealth. And that's really an appeal from the heart, because it's very dangerous. And yes, I like the idea of getting into the poor people's campaign and things like that, because he has found a way to relate. But we cannot be nice to them, okay?
Thank you, Margo. George, go ahead.
Thank you. Hello, all. Yeah, so I was just going to add to that is, like, one of the things that really frustrates me is the pacifism of the Democratic leadership. It's like their unwillingness to actually fight. And like, yeah, like exactly when we hear calls from Biden for unity, with he wants to unite with people that are literally trying to steal the election from him, which is like, for me, it's really unreasonable. I mean, we're not hearing a word from the Democratic leadership. They're not even calling the efforts. Pennsylvania legislature is trying to intrude resolution to decertify the result. Now, it's clownish. I don't think it's going to reach anywhere. But the fact that they're trying it by itself is pretty scary. And we need people to call them out. And I'm not talking about people, like, I'm talking about people in the Democratic leadership. They need to step up. Like, this is really dangerous. That brings me back to the Supreme Court. Why are we in this Supreme Court mess? Like, I think the Democratic leadership could have done better with the Amy Coney Barrett scenario. Like, they were really passive. Really passive with that. Like, we need sometimes, I mean, I like unity, I like love, I like all that, I agree with it, but sometimes you need to fight. Like, there are situations where you really can't just be preaching these things when the other side is pretty much like waging war on you. I think that's important to mention as well. So I kind of agree with that.
Yeah, if I could chime in here for a second, is that okay? Oh no.
Yes, go ahead, George. Okay. Go ahead.
Again, thank you, George, and thank you for what everyone said. I do think that the Democratic Party leadership, and since the time of the DLC, the rise of the DLC, and Clinton, and then Obama, and then on to Biden, look, you have a situation in which look at an issue like Medicare for All. We know that it has now majority support among the general population. Among Democrats, that support is never at this point below 70% and is often right around the 90% level. Okay, what kind of political party in the world doesn't support a policy that's supported by roughly 80% of its base? Okay, well, okay, the money that comes into the Democratic Party, now with the Bernie Sanders transformation of political engagement in the country, it is true that through Act Blue, the Democratic Party raised tons and tons and tons and tons of money, this time even through small donations. But generally, the political formation of Clinton, Obama, Biden, right? The president-elect and the last two Democratic presidents, their donor base has come from a group that probably 90% opposes Medicare for All, okay? It comes from Silicon Valley and it comes from Wall Street. Wall Street certainly opposes Medicare for All, right? Because health insurance companies are actuarial institutions. When they're not interfered with the prospect of their disappearance, could happen if Bernie Sanders had become president, they are incredibly good investments to have in your diversified portfolio because they're almost guaranteed, they're making huge profits right now because no one's using their healthcare because they're scared to go into the doctors or the hospitals in spite of COVID and the escalation of need because of COVID. Less people are actually using their healthcare because they're scared to go into hospitals or doctors. So they're just collecting money from their premiums and not paying out for the healthcare use, and their profits are soaring. So, you know, Wall Street doesn't want to see Medicare for All. But the Democratic Party has a contradiction inherent in between its donor base and what its base wants. And so that really paralyzes it in its capacity to do things that will improve the lives of people across the country. And the nature of the party, too, hasn't been particularly good when it has done very little to improve anybody's life economically over the past 40 years, except the investor class. But when it does, it's not particularly aggressive about announcing that it does that. And that's because, you know, there's always talk of like a two-party foreign policy consensus. There's really been a two-party economic consensus when it comes to the concerns of the investor class. And it's been a deprioritization of the needs of average people. So look, the middle of the country, yes, all of the issues that are not economically grounded are very significant. But I do believe if you mixed pro-democracy, the things that the, you know, moderate Democrats and us agree on, and then you combined it with a significant set of volleys of economic programs that would improve the welfare of the average citizen, with the balance of the two parties being so close, and even look at a state like Texas, Texas is in play, I do think we can really improve the performance of Democrats across the country and marginalize the Republican Party. But again, will moderate Democrats pursue economic policies that will improve the livelihood of the average American? That's one of the things we have to push for. And again, I only return to that point because when you have these political forces so balanced, if we are able to pull 4%, 5%, just 7% of the Republicans into our camp, we'll crush them nationally. That's how close these things are balanced. So even with gerrymandering, even with the imbalance of the Electoral College in the Senate, you know, there are two open seats in the Senate next time. Even if we lose both seats in Georgia, there are more Republican Senate seats to hold next time. Again, if we have economic policies that improve the livelihood of people across the country, you could actually see the House be held by the Democrats. And when then it's Pennsylvania and North Carolina, two states that are winnable for Democrats, where the Republican incumbents are stepping down. Another thing, too, a much more person, much more moderate Democratic Party politics than myself, E.J. Dionne, has said in his book Code Red that it's really essential for the fate of the world right now, because the Democratic Party, all of its catering to the investor class, does believe in the science of the global climate emergency. And by the way, John Kerry hasn't been a very good player on that front. He was just named the climate czar. But John Kerry is like the guy who gets the A-list docket. And so it did signify by the naming of Kerry that they care. Okay. And that's a good thing because they didn't care in the past. They didn't care adequately. They didn't put their top dog on that particular issue. So it's good to see that they care so much about that. And E.J. Dionne says right now in this country, and this is not just for the climate emergency, but also for the welfare of democracy, we need a 12-year uninterrupted run of the Republican Party not controlling the federal government. Because the Republican Party is so far to the right It's so catastrophic on climate. It is so wedded to the fossil fuel industry and all that's reactionary in American politics that I don't think the Democratic Republic, let alone the global climate, can survive the Republican Party coming back into power. So we have to find a way to cobble together a winning political majority in the next 2 years. And I am a radical person on the American political spectrum on the left, but you know, we have to be pragmatic. We have to push. And by the way, Dion, who again is to the right of me politically, he agrees the only way the Democrats can maintain that is through progressive policies going more into the fore in the Democratic Party, because the base of the Democratic Party will be energized by the inclusion of those progressive measures. And particularly when you look at the demographics of age in this country, people just 50 and under could have only voted. So you had a Logan Run scenario where only people 50 and under could have voted. Bernie Sanders would have won this election in a national landslide, because 40 and under, he's massively more popular than any other politician in the country. Enough so that if it was 50 and under voting, he'd win easily. And so we have age on our side in that regard.
Ellie, you raised your hand. You wanted to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to actually say, Rich, I really like to emphasize, I really like the fact that you emphasize, reaching out to the center. We don't want to capitulate, and there are times where we have to fight, and there are other times we have to fight, in a more acerbic way, maybe. At the same time, if we do not engage them, they'll hyper-agendize. You know, part of the reason that there were a confluence of things that occasioned Trumpism, even if we look at it macroscopically, in a micro scale, not globally, is that lots of people felt that they were called, bigots, they were called Philistines, xenophobes, racist, all kinds of things. And they felt that they were looked down upon. And so it's a delicate balancing act. But if we don't engage them, then religious zealotry will commandeer the order of the day, or will be a power broker. And just look at theocratic Iran or theocratic Israel, for that matter. The religious minority power stems from the fact that they are perennially perennial sides fighting at each other. So I totally agree with you, Richard. We need to engage. We need to know when to fight, but we also have to engage. If we don't engage, then nothing constructive happens.
Thank you, Ellie.
Yeah, I want to add to that too. I really do think it's a little dangerous sometimes when we just glob everybody together as past the point of being redeemed. In my lifetime, there are two groups that are just, it's open season on making fun of them in mainstream culture. One is Germans, and the other are like white middle Americans. They're the butt of jokes on all the late night TV shows, and they resent the hell out of it, as well they should. And who are these like coastal elitists to be looking down their noses at these guys? And so I do appreciate that. And I hear the people are saying, we got to call it out, we got to fight it. Yeah, well, that's political ideology. It's not people. And having contempt for people. And another thing too is, and I'm not a fan of Malcolm Gladwell's actually. Malcolm Gladwell in one of his books points out that in romantic relationships, what's the one thing that no romantic relationship can survive? It's not fighting. It's not jealousy. It's contempt. Once contempt enters into a relationship, it is shot. And you have nothing but contempt. And you could feel the contempt just pouring off of Hillary Clinton, obviously the famous quote about deplorables. But really, to anybody who wasn't for her, she just had contempt. So, yeah. And I think we have to embrace the, and I do this in many ways, really. I appreciate the debate between Danette and Rich, but I don't know where exactly to fall on that debate, but I really appreciate Rich's reaching out and understanding the need to reach out to people. And I think we have to take that back to the progressives.
Thank you. Thank you, Alan. Go ahead, Danette.
Sorry, I wasn't yelling at you. I wanted to apologize for that. I just get really hot about that subject.
Yeah.
I actually, Nancy just brought up a really good question. I've actually wondered this myself. What is it about Trump that the evangelicals like? And the one theory I've heard is that a lot of them, the really far right evangelicals, think that he's going to hasten the rapture. Have you heard anything about that? That's one theory I heard, and I don't know if that's true, but yet Marlene's saying yes. That's true.
I've heard that too. This is Betty.
Thank you, can you hear me, Betty? Yeah, we can hear you. Did you have anything more to say?
Yeah, I would like to touch on Dr. Barber. If there's a true Christian upon this planet, it's that man, Dr. Barber. Do you guys know him? That's a real Christian. He believes in that women have a right to choose. He believes that LGBTQ people have a right to exist. And he's a Christian. Yeah. So I agree with one of the other young lady that was on that spoke before, and she said that she thinks that there should be a separation of between church and state, and I totally agree with that. And the so-called religious right, they're dangerous because they just go about that what their so-called Bible says, and that this is just their own interpretation, and they want to force it on other people. I know they want to include that with politics, and that's very, very dangerous. And I want to say something before I leave. Trump is not going to last very much longer. Mark my words. He's not going to last much longer.
Did you raise your hand, Marlene?
Yes, I wanted to add just one little comment about the evangelical Christians. Going back to born-again Christianity, a lot of that has stemmed from the inability to adapt to change and the being more comfortable living back in the days of the Brady Bunch. And evangelical Christians, along with those that were raised in things like Orthodox Christianity and things like that, it is much easier and much more comforting not to see themselves as foot soldiers for change, but to be involved in letting that all go. They so much espouse that everything is in God's hands. It's much more about building, racking up brownie points for a ticket into heaven. And it's really based so, so much on wanting to live back in a stage of life that we no longer have in this world. And there also is a need to associate with changing and being separate from the masses, of seeing themselves as being part of a middle class culture that where you make yourself, that you have pulled yourself up, that you're part of that, and seeing that making it or not, or being successful and earning these brownie points into heaven, or being okay economically, is a matter of choice. And there's just a whole culture in that, and it's a very conservative culture. And many of your Catholics, once they become middle class, sadly leave the Catholic Church, which in many ways, in many respects, much of Catholicism is much more progressive than especially your Jesuits and Mary Knowles. And they go to the evangelical churches and become supporters of conservative politics. And that's sad. Okay, enough said.
Well, I wanted to add before I get to you, Danette, and that this is all dangerous. Not reaching out to Christians is dangerous.
Right.
So everything is dangerous about this. So as far as what certain Christians think about what Trump is doing and why they're supporting him, there's probably one answer for every person. I know that they have a conservative sort of theology or some type of orthodox theology, but I don't think that that's the reasons they actually are voting for Trump. And I think it's important to recognize that we all have our ideologies. We all have our ideas. Right? And that's where we all come from, whether they're religious ideas or ideology. or whatnot. We're all coming to the table with our own views, our own values, our own religious beliefs. And that doesn't necessarily make these people evil or more dangerous than the rest of us. So that's just what I wanted to add. Is there anybody else who, Danette.
Oh yeah, just a couple of things. I'm on a one payer state coalition, and one of the ladies is a former, was she a senator from Colorado, I think? Yeah, is that right, Dr. Bill, Jeannie?
Yep.
And she actually is trying to, she's doing some research on how to talk to conservatives about Medicare for All and kind of the talking points that would convince them. And I think that might work the same for something like this too. And then the other point I wanted to bring up too is how, I'm curious about this just at a personal level, how the evangelical Christians got so far away from Jesus's teachings, because he taught nothing of this. Like, they wouldn't even accept him if he appeared to them today. He did everything 180 degrees different than what they're preaching, which just blows my mind. He, you know, healed the sick and was for the poor and the downtrodden. And it just, you know, just on a personal level, I find it mind blowing. So anyway.
Can I speak?
Go ahead, Betty.
You know, this is the first, seriously, you even though there's a little intellectual bench, that's okay. I mean, that's okay. But the fact that you actually delved into some of the real core issues that are affecting the Democratic Party and the elections and the Republicans. This is so enlightening, because I've always thought everything you guys have said today, I've been pondering that myself. And I want to thank you. I love this group. I like you.
Awesome. Thank you, Betty. And you'll get a chance to join us often too, because we're trying to start a PDA chapter. And so
awesome.
So I'm gonna keep everybody's emails, if that's okay, and send out emails to you when we schedule our next meeting. And I just want to end by saying that democracy is a progressive issue, and we need to organize around that as well. Thank you, Alan, for joining us. Thank you, everybody, for coming and being on the call and sharing your opinions. And thank you. This has been Bible Study for Progressives. If you enjoyed the program, please subscribe to our podcast or put us in your favorites and write a 5-star review. Tell your friends about us and share us on social media. Follow us on Facebook and click the donate button at modernlectionaries.blogspot.com. Your support will help us reach more people, produce more and better shows, and cover the cost of production. Feel free to send me a note or comment on the show. I would love to hear from you. Until next time, this is Rich Procida. Thank you for listening.